this week on A Lively Experiment, the U.S. Secretary of Transportation comes to Rhode Island to take a look at the failed Washington Bridge for himself. And we sit down with one of the senators pushing for changes to the state's open records law.
A Lively Experiment is generously underwritten by...
Hi, I'm John Hazen-White, Jr. For over 30 years, A Lively Experiment has provided insight and analysis of the political issues that face Rhode Islanders. I'm a proud supporter of this great program and Rhode Island PBS.
Joining us on the panel, Providence Journal reporter Amy Russo, Boston Globe reporter Ed Fitzpatrick, and political contributor Scott McKay. Hello and welcome to this week's Lively. I'm Jim Hummel. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg called Rhode Island's two-year timetable for replacing the Washington Bridge aggressive after a tour this week with the governor and DOT director Peter Alviti. And a gaggle of politicians eager to don their yellow safety vests and get some face time on the news to show their constituents. Scott, let me begin with you. We're actually fellow East Bayers. No truth to the rumor that we stayed at a hotel last night. But so that obviously we've been talking about this for weeks and weeks. I didn't think a lot of news came out of the visit, but it makes a statement just the fact he's here.
Well, I think obviously it was a big photo op, let's be honest. I think what Buttigieg said, if you translate it out of PR and politician talk, the timeline is, I would call it aspirational or optimistic. Yeah. You know, you could use some other more descriptive terms, but that's at least what we have. I don't think we know what the heck is going on here as well as we should. I mean, you know, it's a nice show that the Biden administration cares and they send somebody who's high level here, which is great. But the fact is that I don't think he's going to be able to move this project any faster.
It was funny. They all now call it the doomed Washington Bridge. I don't know where that phrase came from, but it's like the embattled politician, the doomed bridge. It seems to be that the tack now is going to be, we're going to blame it on people who were dead and who built the bridge 60 years ago. And this is a one in a kind bridge. So let's move on.
Yeah, I mean, even Peter Alviti said, you know, those estimates of the cost and the time frame can change once you get to the design build phase. I interviewed House Speaker Shikachu, said, you know, he's worried about the budget. And if it's $300 million now, cost estimates for a lot of projects have gone over in recent years with all the interest rates. So, yeah, those numbers could be aspirational. Buttigieg called it aggressive, but needs to happen. But we'll see if that happens.
Some people can work around it. But East Providence, and, of course, you cover Providence, right, it's been a huge issue.
Right. There's still a lot of backup of traffic. And obviously, when Buttigieg was here, his messaging was very positive. And you're right. He's blaming designers from the 1960s. Rhode Islanders want to know who's accountable for this. And in the meantime, Providence's streets have been damaged by really heavy trucks that are interstate traffic being diverted through the city, through local roads. And the city council is now trying to put caps on the weights of those trucks so that some of this damage stops. It's a two-year timeline we're looking at. As Scott said, it's, you know, it's aspirational, long time, could be a lot of damage.
Do you think, so is that gaining popularity or support among city leaders? And would they run into, those are local roads there, are there any state roads involved? Or I guess Angel Street's a city street, right?
These are three local thoroughfares, Angel Street, Waterman, and Gano.
Yep.
And they're trying to keep these trucks off of the street. Basically, this ordinance was fast-tracked through the council. It's already gotten its first passage. Now it's in committee, still needs a second passage to become official, but usually it'll go to committee first. It doesn't typically get a vote first. This means there's really some momentum there.
You know what their first mistake was? They took out the speed bumps at the end as you come over the Henderson Bridge. They got to put those back.
Yeah, your heart just has to go out to the small businesses, particularly in East Providence.
Yeah.
You know, when they first did this, they weren't messaging it well. And I was driving down Broadway and I said, oh, my Lord, there must be a huge wake at Rebello's tonight.
Right.
And then I keep driving down and there's like two lanes in one lane and there's, you know, police officers out there directing traffic. And it's just, it's like a crap, you know, shoot. You just don't know. It's a certain time of day. You get lucky. Otherwise, if you miss it in the morning or a rush hour, you can just get stuck there. And if there's a fender bender, forget it.
What did you go ahead?
You raised the point about how they're looking for someone to blame. The governor used the phrase, the day of reckoning is coming. And Brown University professor Wendy Schiller talked to her about it. And she said, you know, there's some danger in that because the day of reckoning could be for him. You don't know what they're going to find when they start looking into this.
Yeah, but I also think, and we talked about this with Wendy a couple of weeks ago, that before he said that, he must have had a game plan in his mind that and maybe Buttigieg was previewing that. We're going to blame dead people. You know, maybe they're on pensions in Florida. You know, people we can't do. But I wonder if that flies with the public if he says the day of reckoning is coming and none of the people, the current people at DOT, are part of that reckoning. Because he seems to be standing behind Peter Alviti.
He totally
right?
stood behind Peter Alviti. That question was asked initially, and he was upset when it first came up with Brian Crandall. But at the last press conference, the briefing on the bridge, it was asked. And my colleague Brian Amaral asked Alviti, why should we have faith in you? You've been the DOT director for X number of years. And he answered that and touted his record, saying we've fixed a lot of bridges. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
What did you think when you heard that day of reckoning?
I mean, it sounded like somebody was going to be held accountable. And look, nobody is being held accountable right now. We don't see people resigning or being fired. So when's the day of reckoning that's coming really soon?
I'm wondering if he's looking at the Link Chafee template from 38 Studios and hiring an outside law firm and seeing if he can go after some of the contractors or some of the people who didn't discover this and see if the state can find some deep pockets and maybe, you know, claw back some money.
This is a little bit different, though. I mean, 38 Studios, we lost money. There are tens of thousands of people sitting in traffic who don't really care if we get $50 million back, right?
There's some truth to that, but protecting here's what they're really going to be upset about. They can't get to work on time.
Yeah. But then both of our wives make that commute into Providence.
That's
don't
true.
They? From the East Bay. And how has that been?
It's been, like I say, it's a crapshoot.
Yeah.
Some days, you know, it works pretty well. And some days, the doctor, as we call her, will say, look, you know, you get behind a fender bender. The other morning, there was this accident with three or four cars. And look out.
Yeah.
You're just stuck there. And you know, you've seen it. In the East Bay, it's like we should change the license plates to the state where you can't cross the bridges.
Yeah, either way.
It's just crazy.
We asked roadmap readers to give us ideas for a bridge-themed playlist to make that in the next 2 years go by.
Have you gotten that?
And some great suggestions. Bridge over troubled water, or, as they called it, a troubled bridge over water.
Exactly.
We got Wrecking Ball, Highway to Hell, Amanda Milkovich wanted Sammy Hagar's I Can't Drive 55.
Drive 25, right?
There you go.
All right. This will continue. Providence Mayor Brett Smiley got a maybe unexpectedly chilly reception from lawmakers. He's trying to put in noise cameras. So I will hand the baton off to you because you've been covering this. Why does he want this and what's it involve?
So in Mayor Smiley's recently unveiled legislative package, he wanted to get permission from the State House lawmakers to be able to use these noise cameras. He says police don't have the resources to go stop drivers who are playing music really loudly or stop motorcyclists with straight pipes. So these cameras are going to work like almost like a license plate reader, snap a photo of the plate when they're set off by loud noise and basically issue citations.
So you get it
people.
In the mail 2 weeks later and you're like, oh,
exactly.
I was playing I Can't Drive 55 a little too loudly, right?
Right. So, but lawmakers are worried about this. This went before the House Judiciary Committee recently, and there was a lot of questions over, well, is everyone in the state now going to want to put in these cameras? Is policing going to be automated? What are the taxpayers going to pay? They're fair questions.
Because the enabling legislation is not just for Providence.
Right. It's for everybody who wants to. It doesn't compel other cities to do it, but they can if this passes.
What about this Providence resident?
it's a question of whether that's the right solution, but it is a problem. Like on the podcast, the Rhode Island Report podcast, we had Erica Walker on from the Community Noise Project at Brown University, and she said, Providence is louder than Boston. And she talked about, it, you know, it, but it is in certain, like some... She talked about how noise is a proxy for power, how richer neighborhoods are quieter. So, you know, the mayor says he's going to put cameras in all the neighborhoods, but I think we already know that the richer neighborhoods are quieter. And, you know, so is the enforcement going to come down on low-income communities? There's a lot of questions about how this is going to proceed.
The other thing is Big Brother. Here we go once again. We keep eroding in our society any type of privacy, and this is just another chip at that. And I think the ACLU has raised some questions about it.
They did. Hannah Stern, who's a policy associate with the Rhode Island ACLU, she testified against this bill. Obviously, no surprise. They don't really support cameras of pretty much any kind. But they are concerned about how these are going to work. They basically want more detail. And we haven't gotten a lot of detail about how this works, who the vendor is going to be, what it's going to look like.
And I think the mayor indicated that, hey, let's continue the discussion. But, I mean, he may see the writing on the wall that this is it's running into pretty stiff opposition. Do you get the feeling that he expected that? Or
I don't know that he did, because he's been very focused on quality of life. To him, this is very much a quality of
life
issue.
It's like picking up the garbage and making sure
right. Right. So I'm not sure.
He's become the new Rudy Giuliani from the old days.
Yeah.
People are laughing about it, but that's...
Well, let's hope he doesn't turn into the Rudy Giuliani
of
the present days. The other thing, too, is the cameras in general, and it always... their argument always rings hollow. This is for safety. Not just the noise cameras are a whole different, but the speed cameras, I would venture to say how many people have gotten nabbed somewhere in Providence going by a school. You're just not thinking, and then all of a sudden the 85, and you're not going to take a day out of work. They're getting millions and millions of dollars, but they say it's for safety. And I think that troubles some taxpayers.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that the source of all the noise complaints is necessarily in a car that would capture that. I mean, it might be the neighbors cranking the tunes. It could be me playing some Springsteen. You know, I mean, it's just part of the problem.
Have they talked at all about expansion? I know they were talking speed cameras and then the red light cameras that Providence, other communities too, but does Providence want to expand, or you think they're, because they added on a bunch just within the last couple of years.
So Smiley is also trying to get approval to use so-called block the box cameras, which is for people who basically cause gridlock in an intersection. It's when you go through and the light's already red and then you're caught in the middle of the intersection. Now nobody can come this way. So that's another camera. So, you know, there's no
telling. Can I just tell you, that's in the Rhode Island driving constitution.
Yeah.
Who does not block the box, right? Hand up again. I don't know if they passed the law or it was law already. And somebody, I didn't know what the term was. And I said, block the box? What is that? And my wife said, Hummel, that's what you do every time you wait in the intersection. And then, you know, you do the Rhode Island slide.
Well, there's a Rhode Island where the yellow light is a suggestion and the red light's a challenge.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right. Among many pieces of legislation being proposed this year, major changes to the Access to Public Records Act. Of course, this is near and dear to everybody on this panel, but it's also important for people out there like you who are watching this, maybe want to know more about your government. Senator Lou DePalma, who is also chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, he's been championing this on the Senate side. Evan Shanley, the representative on the House, we had a chance to sit down with him to talk a little bit about what those changes might look like. Here it is.
Changing the Access to Public Records Act is going to be heavy lift. I'm not stopping until we get it done. It's the right thing to do for Rhode Island. Rhode Islanders want it. Everybody wants it. The only way government's going to get better is everybody knows what's going on.
Well, not everybody wants it, because a lot of people in this building don't want it. When you introduced this last year, you got almost instant response. The police chiefs didn't like it for some reason. The governor didn't like it for some reason. And you're getting some of that same resistance this year.
Took all the comments we had gotten last year from those same agencies, based on this feedback, what are we doing with it? Changes were made. I think improvements were made to the bill to where we are now.
And you're still getting pushback.
Correct. People don't want change.
What was your original interest in APRA?
So the interest really stemmed from the work that I had done as far as chairing the Senate Committee on Rules, Government Ethics, and Oversight. As part of that 2-year stint, I interacted with the APRA law, unfortunately, many times. Even to the point where I had something to the AG's office because it was denied a couple different times. And just the very nature of accessing and ascertaining facts and data from agencies, I said, this shouldn't be this hard. But we almost have to, I'll say, reshape the narrative or reshape how we do things. goal was to try and get information out there, make it just available from the get-go. So if...
Without even having to ask for it.
Absolutely. Is it going to take space on some server somewhere? Yes. That's minimal cost. So let's be more proactive with the documents that somebody might want. We want the citizens to be engaged in the public discourse. If you're going to have a particular item that the counselors are going to look at, make that available to the public as well. And you can make it electronically because it's already there. I'm reminded of Supreme Court Justice Brandeis summarized that sunshine being the best it's effective for government.
So the day that I visited Senator DePalma, he had just gotten a stack of, and this has happened in the House too, they had a hearing earlier this week, a stack from government agencies this thick saying why they don't want it. No surprise to you?
Not a surprise. This bill was introduced last year and the governor's office opposed it. The state police opposed it. A lot of the state agencies oppose it.
Why?
They fight this tooth and nail. I mean, you know, there are 47 different changes proposed in this legislation. I mean, this area of the law has not been updated in more than a decade. And we've got new technology like body cameras. So it covers everything. It covers body cameras, emails, and all these things. So every step of the way, they fight it. To give you an example, there's one section that would say if you're requesting a document in the public interest, as the media does all the time, then you waive the fee. Because the governor's office, the DOT, they've been charging hundreds of dollars for the Washington Bridge. We're talking about the Washington Bridge. Some of the most important issues affecting people's lives today, they're charging all these documents to find out what's going on, thousands of dollars in some cases, to find out what's going on. So it will let you waive it. And the governor's office says, well, we can't determine if it's in the public interest. That's for a court. Even though the federal government does, with the Freedom of Information Act, every day federal agencies decide if that's in the public interest. And if it's coming from the media, it obviously is.
Every day. Well, this is a tool of our trade.
Yeah, exactly. And you've already seen, as Ed mentioned, a lot of documents being requested lately from different media outlets. And sometimes we've been charged varying amounts. So the Journal had a higher bill than a TV outlet, I think, not too long ago. And so that's questionable. And I think for even average citizens, they're even more likely than journalists to be hit with these fees. And it's a deterrent. It has a chilling effect. It makes them throw up their hands and say, yeah, okay, I won't bother because I'm going to be charged $900, $1,000, maybe more than that. They won't bother.
You know, I'm seeing this nationally. You look at politicians, they want more privacy. They don't want sunshine, as Justice Brandeis said. You look at Cancun Cruz, the famous senator from Texas, who now wants airports to shield public officials so you can't take photos of them and have separate ways to get on the plane that shields them from the public. Governor Healey in Massachusetts went away for 4 days, won't say where she went. I mean, luckily there wasn't a marathon bombing or something going on. Won't say who she was with, where she went. I assume that her state police escort went with her, the people who guard her.
Taxpayer dollars.
Yes, it is. And then also, you look at Florida, which used to have really good sunshine laws until DeSantis got in there and decides he wants to run for president. And they passed laws down there that shield all of his travel out of state, how much money he was spending on running for president and running around the country using state funds, using state resources. And so I think this is a real problem. It just seems like political people, as Ed was saying, you know, they just try to put up these barriers.
You're on the New England First Amendment Coalition, so, you know, you're taking a larger view on this. It just seems in my four decades, you've been doing a lot longer than I have, Scotty, but it's almost as there are fewer reporters, then government's attitude, this is my opinion, is, all right, the onus is going to be on you. We're going to deny it, and if you want to appeal it, then you have to spend your resources to do it. No is the default rather than yes with an exception.
Yes, it's the knee-jerk no. That's what drives me crazy. That's become the default mode for far too many government agencies. And, with outlets, media outlets cutting back, you know, they're saying you got to go to court if you want that fee waiver. How many news outlets now have attorneys that they're going to pay big bucks, the legal fees, to go get those records? So, and the point I'd make for the public, saying, oh, that's what journalists are concerned about. No, it's what the public is concerned about. The Washington Bridge, Tidewater Landing, an ethics commission appointee.
The Philadelphia trip.
The Philadelphia trip. We just had an Access Through RI panel discussion last week, and the examples like Eli Sherman from BBPRI talking about the documents that showed the Philadelphia vegan cheese trip by Rhode Island officials that was so embarrassing. Colleen Cronin from EcoRI talking about how she put in records requests for crash data and was told no. So this is stuff that matters to people.
Yeah, talk about being around for a long time. You remember, Jim and Ed probably too, that there used to be five reporters for every one flack. Now there's five flacks for every one reporter. Yeah. I mean, the balance has really changed over the years.
Well, and the Journal had Joe Kavanaugh for years, and they knew they spent a lot of time. It wasn't on libel cases. It was 95% of his work was public access, and they knew, the government agencies knew, if you turn them down without a good reason, you're going to be in court or you're going to be at the AG's office, and it was a deterrent.
Yeah, to that point, I think now you hear public officials saying, oh, I don't want to be sued for giving out the record, and they're not as concerned about being
sued for not
giving it
what
out.
What about the crash data? Because that's been an issue for you, right?
Yeah, that was of great interest to me. One piece of this is that this bill would compel the Rhode Island Department of Transportation to release crash data. And for years, it's been refusing to release crash data, basically because it's afraid of being sued, perhaps for not making certain safety improvements on
different
streets.
How about do your job so you won't get sued?
Well, there's a good question.
So, but I wonder, Ed, as you were talking, 47 different changes. I hate to be the Monday morning quarterback. Did they bite off more than they could chew? Should they have said, let's look, like the drunk driving law went from a civil penalty to 0.1 to 0.08 over many sessions. Maybe we take this, or did they think if they're going to pass it, they're going to say, we're only going to do this once every 10 years, so we might as well get done what we're going to do.
Yeah,
I know that's a tough, that's a battle.
I think, you know, I'd be surprised if all 47 changes made it through to a final bill. I do think the legislature and Senator De Palma, it's got his mind around this, going to see where the biggest sources of opposition are. We'll see, but there are a lot of very important things in that, you know, access to emails, access to 911 calls, increasing, getting rid of some of these fees that serve as a barrier. So it's an important piece of legislation.
Finally, what would help you the most? What if you could pick one thing to change?
Oh, man. I would say as a local reporter, crash data and body cam footage.
Yeah, and that's something that, 10 years ago we weren't even talking about, right?
Right. Yeah.
All right, let's go. Man, time marches on. Let's do outrages and or kudos. Scotty, what do you have this week?
Well, it's March Madness time, and my outrage is what's happening with college sports. It's getting just corrupt. I mean, the portal, the transfer portal, is out before the games are over. Mm. You're going to have kids, as Coach Hurley from UConn said, they're going to just end up as mercenaries playing three or four different colleges, you know, during your playing ball. And Dartmouth now, where the basketball team lost $900,000 last year, cost the college, they want to go union. And I'm pro-union, and it's great, but what happens when the kid flunks the course and you're off the team? Do you file an unfair labor practice against the professor? I mean, at what point does this just get to be a farce?
You know, I also think with that, the transfer portal, they've loosened the rules. You used to have to be able to sit out. You had to wait a year.
Right.
So that was a disincentive. Now, the untold story is that so many kids now put their name in the transfer portal, have scholarships, they go, and then nobody claims them. And then what happens?
The whole thing is a mess, and hopefully former Mass Governor Baker, who's now the head of the NCAA, can do something about it. It's not going to be easy because of the court decisions.
Yeah.
And we know for years the NCAA was, frankly, arrogant, and they were overregulated. You know, your kids couldn't even get enough money to go to McDonald's.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really, or do their laundry. It was really bad that way. Now we're going the other way, and you know as well as I do that this NIL money, that schools are basically the recruiting and how much money's involved.
Yeah, it's formalized bribery.
Yeah, you're right. And pretty soon we're going to end up with a situation where Why even tell them to go to class?
Yeah. Ed, when is Syracuse playing this week?
Oh, you are cocky.
It's
this
pretty
year.
Hard. Yeah, I know. Hey, listen, North Carolina missed the tournament last year, so I should not talk. Yeah. Do you have an outrage or a kudo?
To stick with the March Madness theme, I'm outraged that the Providence College Friars are not in the tournament. I mean, anybody who watched the team this year, the number of, what, six quad one wins, they beat Creighton in the Big East tournament. You got Devin Carter playing for that team. Who doesn't want him in the tournament? That's an outrage. But Syracuse will be North Carolina next year.
So maybe.
But the Catamounts are in UVM.
That's right. If they can pick off Duke. This is going to turn into a sports show before the end of the time. But I'll tell you, there are some people who want to expand the tournament just like they want to pack the court. The right. Supreme Court. Maybe we expand it, and then Syracuse and Providence would have gotten in. Amy, do you have an outrage or a kudo?
I am going to break from the topic of sports and news and just give my kudos to all the animal rescue organizations in Rhode Island and New England, because today is my dog's gotcha day. Some people are familiar with Buddy.
Buddy!
And this is my you should have brought Buddy with you. Shout out to Buddy. Shout out to Buddy.
That's great. Let's stay with you. We just have a couple minutes left. PVD Fest is back.
Right.
Maybe the mayor learned some lessons last year.
Right. So I'll just go over the changes really quick. They've moved it back downtown to Kennedy Plaza. It was last year alongside the Providence River and the pedestrian bridge. People weren't so happy about that. Block parties will be allowed again. A little bit of a rollback on the no drinking rule. You still can't have an open container, but they're going to have these sort of cordoned off zones where you can drink. And this year, one key change, 2 days instead of three. The third date will be a rain date.
What was the original thinking moving it down to the old 195 land? What was the thinking?
I am not quite sure. I know the mayor wanted to take the focus off of partying and more on the arts and more family friendly. So maybe that's part of it. I'm not quite sure.
It's going to be fun to see that, because the kids are just coming back to college now that they've moved it from June to September.
Yeah, what was the thinking behind the fall? Because of that? Because there's a little more energy and maybe...
I would assume so.
But the kids are going to be ready to party, so look out. This isn't going to be...
That's going to bump up against the open container
baboom.
And then there's... they're going to have the noise cameras up then.
Right.
Look out.
Maybe. What do you think about the...
The PVD Fest? Yeah. I thought PVD Fest in its prior iteration, there was great. You know, you had people from every neighborhood coming together downtown. It was so much fun. Such an eclectic mix of artistic performances. So, you know, I wouldn't have messed with that success.
All right. Folks, that is all the time we have. It's a quick 30 minutes. Thank you for joining us. Scott, great to see you again. Amy and Ed. And we surmised all of us are alumni of the Providence Journal. We'll have a little alumni show here. Folks, if you don't catch us Friday at 7 or Sunday at noon, all of our shows are archived at ripbs.org/lively. We're all over social media and wherever you get your favorite podcast. Come back here next week as a Lively experiment continues. We hope you have a great weekend.
Lively Experiment is generously underwritten by...
Hi, I'm John Hazen-White, Jr. For over 30 years, a Lively Experiment has provided insight and analysis of the political issues that face Rhode Islanders. I'm a proud supporter of this great program and Rhode Island PBS.